Today's program is brought to you by the Academy Opus Cassius, the cheese industry's unique center for professional development. For more information and to apply for courses, visit our website at www.academymons.com. That's academie-mons.com.
I'm Erica Wides, host of Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
The cheese business is full of people who accidentally ended up in cheese, and businesses that began a certain way ended up adding so much value to the cheese industry at large. One such business is Micro Dairy Designs, a company whose tagline is, "Committed to small dairies with big dreams." Welcome to Cutting the Curd. This is your host, Greg Blaze, and today we're happy to have Frank Kipe of Micro Dairy Designs in Smithburg, Maryland on the line. How are you today, Frank?
Hi, Greg. I'm excellent as always. Thank you very much, and thanks for having me.
You bet, man. So, Frank, I'd love for you to start by telling us a little bit about how you started Micro Dairy Designs. It seems you started the company almost by accident.
It was a complete accident. My original dream was to milk two Jersey cows and make the world's most expensive ice cream and market it as the world's most expensive ice cream. And I thought I had everything I needed. We have a little 10-acre farmette and an old bank barn, and we thought we were pretty well set to go until I called the milk inspector and asked him to come out and bless my project. And instead of blessing it, they handed me the, at that time it was 380 pages of the Federal Pasteurized Milk Ordinance, and said, "This is what you're going to need if you want to do what you're planning to do." And they said you should plan on spending at least $250,000.
And I'm sure everybody has that lying around, you know. You could just
and at that time I didn't have the $250,000, and so I got mad and I just said, "Well, I'll just build it myself then." And so We went after it. The first thing we built was actually a trailer. It was a 12-foot by 50-foot trailer with a two-stall cow milking parlor and a milk house and a bathroom with a shower, an office with a lab, and an equipment room, a storage room, a processing room, and a retail sales area. And then we got to work on the pasteurizer itself, which was kind of the critical piece, it seemed, or the hardest part to do. And my milk inspector was great. I mean, I would send him CAD drawings of what I wanted to build, and he would say, "No, you idiot, you can't do that, but here's how they do it on the real dairies." And we went back and forth for probably a better part of a year or so, and finally got this little pasteurizer built. And he contacted me and said one of his clients, a little goat dairy in Pennsylvania, wanted to look at what we built. And so they came down to take a look at it, and they really liked it and wanted to know if they could buy it. And since I had some ideas to make the next one better, I went ahead and sold that to them and built myself another one. And another of his clients bought that one, and one thing's led to another. And I think now we have about 450 systems installed in 42 states and 13 countries outside the U.S. So you are correct. It's an accidental business, but we are having a lot of fun.
That's pretty awesome, man. I think that's really, really cool. And so my producer, Emily Acosta, she found your company while she was reading about the Abbey of Regina Laudis, which folks might know because of Sister Noella, the cheese nun. They named their pasteurizer Francis after you, which I think is very cool. Who are your other customers?
That was a great honor, but the creativity lies all with that group there. And we find this all the time. We have the greatest customers in the world because they have, so many great ideas. And if we have a knack for anything, it's kind of trying to find an affordable way to build what our customers want to meet their business needs. So
it's pretty awesome. Who are your other customers besides them? Or that we would
know. I beg your pardon?
Who are your other customers besides those guys that we would know?
I don't know. Most of our customers are very small. New York City, Ample Hills Creamery's kind of a well-known place.
Yeah.
Like I said, we've got about 450 customers scattered pretty well all over the country and the world. So
how did you market yourself? Did everybody just sort of come to you?
It's pretty much just the website. When we first got started, we were invited to speak at a couple conferences, the Pennsylvania Association for Sustainable Agriculture, and we got went up there and a number of people found us. But from there, the only other advertising we've ever done was built a little website. So.
So it's sustainable.
And it is far from sophisticated. but I think it was just the point that we were filling a need, and through the blessings of internet search, people can find you from all over everywhere.
Completely. What was the biggest challenge to get your company off the ground?
Certainly, regulatory compliance is the biggest challenge in the dairy processing industry. I mean, like I mentioned, the PMO, the Pasteurized Milk Ordinance, which is the federal guidelines, and then each state has their basically accepts that and then adds their own little nuances and interpretations to it. I think the PMO has now grown to be about 420 pages or so, but just learning a whole new language. In other words, this was all stuff that was new to me, and the regulatory folks have their own unique language that they use, and so learning the language was probably the biggest part of it. And then we always try and steal ideas from other industries where they make things by the tens of thousands, and try and apply them to our process too. So, but I would have to say, going through all the regulations is sometimes very frustrating, and it makes it very difficult to get started. But kind of the whole purpose of our business was to try and put together the roadmap of that, if you will, to make it easy for people to navigate it. And they told me I needed $250,000, and we have a little pasteurizer that a lot of small ice cream shops are using now. They're, is $4,900. So we think we've made some progress at it.
That's pretty awesome. I love the scalability of what it starts out as large machinery. The place that I work in, Italy, we have a modified atmosphere packaging program that we do. These machines are when you take a look at them like in an industrial level, they're massive. You know what I mean? And so we found these these guys they built a tiny little machine where all of those working parts that you can fit, because nobody has any space. You know what I mean? Like people don't they don't have space, and they don't have the capital. So it's like, it's like the model airplane approach, or like building like a ship in a bottle is like how I would look at it, right? Something like that. Although a lot more complicated, it was the regulations, and I'm sure just a total bitch to get around,
Yeah. Well, it is a challenge. In my instance, I was very fortunate to have a milk inspector that was, willing to take the time to a complete idiot, to say, no, you can't do that, or yes, you can do that, and kind of interpret the regulations for us to actually what it meant. So we were very fortunate in that regard. Not everyone is, has that opportunity. But I think what we've seen is, and I've been invited to speak to a lot of regulatory meetings and things like that, because our pasteurizer, our system was so small and so different than what most milk inspectors were used to seeing.
Right.
And we've had the chance to preach to them that our business is the Permanent Employment Act for milk inspectors, because they have to come and inspect every little dairy just like they would do the largest milk plant that you could find. And so if they wanted to have job security, the best thing would be to have about 1,000 small dairies around, and that would give them job security. And as a result, I think people have realized that in an awful lot of places, small-scale dairying is definitely, kind of where the future of a lot of this creativity is going to come from.
Why do you think so?
Well, There's nothing quite like the passion of someone who is wants to develop their own product,
right,
and who is willing to take the risks associated with doing it. And there's a confluence of two things that we see. One is there's a lot of artisanal, you know, people want to build something. They want to make something of their own.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, we've got people that are looking for what I call food with a story. In other words, something that is a little bit unique, who are looking for a special experience as opposed, you know, after your fifth four-wheeler, four-wheelers aren't quite as much fun. People
yeah,
are looking
totally.
For, you know, for a unique experience.
Yeah.
And great food, innovative products made by creative people is the best way to get there.
It's pretty cool. I mean, what just to not to harp on it, but when you talk about these guys would come, the inspectors would come back and be like, "No, you idiot." And I'm sure they didn't say that, but they'd be like, "No, this doesn't comply." Like, what specifically were they referring to in like that you in your design that wasn't working for them?
Well, I think, just for example, in scaling it down to
yeah.
a smaller scale system, you know, in the olden days, a typical vat pasteurizer was like 500 gallons,
uh-huh.
and you needed to have 250 gallons in to be able to have enough milk just to turn the thing on.
Right.
And then, of course, they had to have special valves and so on. I mean, one of the big things is in pasteurizers, for those people that know the pasteurizer business,
yeah.
the thing, you know, the milk inspectors were always told that what you had to have was a close coupled leak detect valve, which is a very unique kind of valve
right.
that makes that keeps the milk sanitary. On the other hand, an awful lot of the federal pasteurized milk ordinance says if you had a valve, it has to be this kind of valve. Actually, there was and then there's another organization called 3A. Sorry to get crazy on you.
No, don't
but
be crazy.
There's another organization, 3A,
be crazy,
basically
I mean.
Tries to interpret
yeah.
the pasteurized milk ordinance guidelines into how to build equipment. And they actually had misinterpreted the regulations, and vat pasteurizers were not things that were used very much. I mean, all the big processing plants use high temperature, short time
right.
pasteurization.
Flash pasteurization.
So the
yeah.
actually the vat pasteurizer regulations had not been updated for 20 years, and they wanted to do an update of the regulations. And I got myself on the committee that was rewriting the regulations, and you know, got to make a lot of contacts through that, but also got people to agree that there are some things that make a lot of sense when you're doing, 1,000 gallons of milk that don't make any sense when you're doing 5 gallons of milk. But it's still just as sanitary, but we wanted to, you know, to walk through that. And in general, people are receptive to that, but you have to convince an awful lot of people because all of these committees work by consensus. So everybody has to be committed before you can go forward. So.
Yeah, 100%. And then I think a lot of those like things, like, you know, the information is outdated, and the people are only based on the information. The people are making their decisions based on the information at hand. And so, you know, you get people who don't necessarily know the industry that are on those boards, I
yep.
would imagine. You know, so they don't know the ins and outs and the everyday needs of the dairy man or dairy gal, I would imagine.
Well, there are some that are brilliant and understand the chemistry and understand the biology and everything like that.
Yeah.
And then there's some that that don't. So it's like in every field, there's people that are easier to work with and less so.
Right.
But one of the other things, you know, as you talk about going through, we had set up very early on in the process three criteria for everything that we were going to build. I mean, we're a very small company.
Uh-huh.
It's just me and my wife and my son-in-law. So
fantastic.
Typically, he builds the equipment, we put it on our truck, and my wife and I deliver it and set it up on the farms and then move on from there. But the three criteria that we set up originally really have stood us in good stead as we navigated through some of those challenges. And the first thing is 100% regulatory compliance.
Yeah.
You know, we design our equipment to meet all the regulations. We're going to try and find the most innovative, creative, and cost-effective way to meet the regulations, but we will meet the regulations.
Right.
The second is what we call call economic sustainability. Everyone wants to be environmentally sustainable, but if you're not economically sustainable, you won't be in business long enough to make a difference.
Hell no.
So we didn't build a lot of exotic equipment. We tried to find simple things that met the requirements to keep, you know, to keep the milk sanitary, but at the same time, you know, didn't cause you to mortgage, you know, the next 20 years of your earnings to pay for.
Right.
And then the third thing, you know, was flexibility, because in small dairies, you know, one of my critiques of the American dairy industry is, you know, we had about three kinds of products. You know, historically, you know, you could have whole milk and you could have chocolate milk and you could have, you know, 2% you know, two kinds of cheese. You could have white colored cheese and blue and yellow colored cheese.
Sure.
And that was about it.
Yep.
And what this has enabled people to do is to do a, you know, much larger variety. So for example, we designed our VAT pasteurizer so that it would work as a legal pasteurizer, but it'll also work, it's insulated, so it'll also work as a yogurt or kefir incubation vat.
Yeah.
It'll work as a cheese vat because we can lift the lid up and work with the cheeses. And so it can do a lot of those different things. It can even work as a small bulk tank connected up with one of our chillers to store the milk until you're ready to process.
Yeah, and the small business owner, the small farmer, everybody needs things that can become other things. Flexibility and transformation are super key. That sounds like some serious challenges. But what I had mentioned to you, before, we get a lot of industry folks and a lot of cheesemakers and dairy people that listen to our show. So you can go as far out there as you like. Do you know what I mean? You can use the languages that you make up, and we'll absorb them into our language. You know what I mean? Anything you want to say about dairying and your equipment is super valuable to us, and we're really happy to talk to you about them. So we're going to take a short break, and then when we come back, I want to talk to you about your mission statement. Hang on with us for a moment.
Sure.
Music for this commercial break is brought to you by RecTech. And this track is called Dues Paid.
The Academy Opus Cassius is the cheese industry's unique center for professional development, offering both practical and classroom training for cheese professionals ready to move their careers to the next level. The Academy is the only professional cheese school integrating hands-on practice, formal instruction, and curriculum-related visits in every course, and attracts students from such diverse countries as Australia, Venezuela, Ukraine, Canada, Sweden, Kenya, and India. Cheesemongering, cheesemaking, and affinage courses form the core curriculum. Sensory analysis training is practiced daily in every program. The Academy also offers insider's tours in New York, London, and Paris, where cheesemongers can meet their international peers and be inspired by different approaches to cheese making and retailing. In the United States, the Academy offers programs in California and Vermont. Our five-day program, Cheese from Pasture to Plate, will run in March 2017 in partnership with Point Reyes Farmstead Cheese and Cowgirl Creamery. The Life of Cheese in 4 Days in June 2017 is our ongoing partnership with Jasper Hill Farm. Both of these hands-on courses are perfect for students preparing for the ACS Certified Cheese Professional Exam. Enrollment is open now, and space is limited to 10. For more information and to apply for this and other courses, visit our website at academymons.com. That's academie-mons.com.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd, broadcasting live on the Heritage Radio Network. This is your host, Greg Blaze, and on the line we've been chatting with Frank Kipe of Micro Dairy Designs in Smithburg, Maryland, though he sells and installs his products to customers around the country. For the next part of our episode, I'd like to talk to you a little bit more about your mission, specifically your thoughts on small dairying as an economically sustainable endeavor, both here and in developing countries. You said that you design your equipment to be economically sustainable and sustainability are tricky words. So has environmental sustainability played a big part in your design, in the design of your products?
Absolutely. But the biggest hurdle that people have to get through is the economics. In other words, can you make a living at
right.
it? Because then you're committed to doing it. So economic sustainability is my priority over environmental sustainability, but both are important. So I'm not minimizing one or the other, but economic sustainability, you know, comes first. And so that's why, you know, for example, what that means is it's got to be affordable to get started. In other words, if you're starting a small creamery, I mean, our typical customer is milking 5 cows, 10 goats, or 20 sheep, or half a dozen water buffalo or camels.
Right.
Okay.
Camels.
So it's not like they're going to have, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to get started. We've got to make it economically sustainable from an upfront capital startup situation, as well as ongoing. So, for example, our service policy is built around UPS. We knew that, that since there was only 3 of us, it's not like we were going to be able to go out, you know, and provide on-site service for our equipment. So we designed our equipment so that the mechanical components can all be repaired by a wrench or repaired with a wrench or a screwdriver.
That's great.
So we built our service model around UPS. So basically, we ship you the part, you use your wrench and your screwdriver to put the part in. You know, we could help you with, you know, videos or things like that if you need them, but you put those on and you save the $100 an hour service call that a typical dairy equipment company would charge you for it. So
completely. So that's great. I mean, so you have people, they have a small amount of animals and, you know, they need a small thing to do their thing with. And I understand, like, these you know, the equipment is typically quite large and quite expensive, and you scale it down.
Yeah.
So you said camels, which I find interesting. That's a, I wanted to, you to tell me more about your thoughts on sustainability economically for creameries in, like, in developing countries, different
Elsa. Okay. The biggest challenge in most developing countries is energy. And so we're working on some things with heat exchange systems to make that a key component. You know, in the United States, it's nice because, you know, we can plug an electric cord into a wall.
Bingo, there you go.
And we have all the energy we need to heat the vat up. Now, you would still want to be efficient, but at the same time, the energy is there and readily available.
Completely.
If you've got to go cut sticks, you know, in the woods or on the savannah, if you got to go cut sticks to build a fire to heat the pasteurizer, that's it's another set of challenges. You know, we've done installations where you know, they thought they had electricity there, and we would install our equipment and they'd have 240 volts, and you power on, you know, a compressor or something like that, and the voltage drops to 70 volts, and then you've got some interesting challenges.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think the energy and heat transfer issues are the biggest challenges, but also many of those places have tremendous opportunities. I mean, you know, we've done a fair amount of stuff in Central Africa.
Yeah, tell me about
that. For example, and they've got good sunlight there, so we're working on things to try and capture as much of that heat as we can, because, you know, every dairy needs hot water and every dairy needs cold water.
Yeah,
or you need heat and cooling capability, and trying to match that. And there's still so much work that needs to be done in that area, and so we basically dedicate a portion of our resources towards towards developing those products projects, and we've got a number of engineering students from Messiah College in Pennsylvania that have been involved in some of these kinds of activities that are really, really smart young people, and they just they think far enough outside the box that they get into the box that most of the rest of the world is in. So
completely, that's really cool. I mean, you know, for me, as I'm a cheesemonger, you know, and how I understand cheese and the dairying industry is, you know, is that making cheese or manipulating the milk adds value to the milk. You know what I mean? Because it appreciates in the value. So what's the, when you said you're working in Central Africa, like, what's one of your customers there that you've helped to add value to their milk and make them economically sustainable in that way?
Sure. I mean, another one of the big challenges, I was born in Zimbabwe, lived in Zambia and Zimbabwe until I came back to the States to go to college.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we, But the biggest challenge in Zimbabwe, for example, is, you know, because of the economic situation there, it is very tough for people to have, you know, to get two meals a day. And the challenge with dairy, of course, is exacerbated because if you don't have good refrigeration, that's a protein source that is very, very transient and temporary.
Yeah.
And so the nice thing about the cheeses are that you can make cheeses and you can have something that's got a much longer life cycle. So now you can make a cheese that has a protein source for the people that will last an extended period of time, and that's really exciting.
Yeah, it's super satisfying. I mean, because that's what they need. I mean, here we eat cheese for a much different reason, you know, but that's the roots of why it's so valuable. That's really cool.
How about for survival, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's what it's all about. I mean, I love cheese and all the things that it represents, but it's just, it's interesting, or it must be interesting for you to be able to get down to the roots of that, you know, you wanted those two Jersey cows, you wanted your nice, you know, you wanted to make super expensive, tasty ice cream, but then you find yourself, you know, installing a pasteurizer somewhere so that people can turn camel milk into food that they can live off of for a while, which is must be a pretty interesting juxtaposition for you. That's really cool. I really like that. That's really great. If folks wanted to learn more about your products and what you do, they got to go to your website. Is that the best way for them to find it out?
That's the best way to find us. microdairydesigns.com. If you want to send an easier email, is frank@kipe. My last name is Kipe, so it's frank@kipe.com. And we'll be happy to send you all of our propaganda, and would love to hear other folks' ideas and ways that we could do everything we do better. My goal in life is to learn at least one new thing every day, and I very seldom fall short of that quota because there's so much interesting stuff out there that needs to be done.
No, there's amazing stuff. So just because I've got you, what was the hardest job you've ever done through this? What was the most challenging? If you can pick one. I've got you here. I want you to tell me.
I really think, go back to the first thing that we started on this was interpreting the regulatory guidelines and getting them in a way where you can, I mean, there's still no such thing as a cheap pasteurizer, but the ability to scale things down and then also to change the technology approach to the extent where it doesn't have to cost $250,000 to get started.
Well, you said that the cost down to $4,900. That's pretty good. That's like a used car.
I had one guy from New York called me. You know, his son had seen me at a conference, and he went back home and showed his dad all the stuff. And his dad says, "Hell, that's cheaper than a pickup truck."
That's fantastic. Do you make any cheese or anything yourself now? Do you make your own products?
I do not. In fact, if you Google Earth my property, my trailer that I made, you know, back in the early 2000s is still sitting in the middle of my field with two cows walking around it, and it has not been used yet. So.
What are the names of your two cows?
Rapunzel and Mary Fay.
Mary Fay and Rapunzel. Are they happy?
Yep. They are happy cows.
That's awesome. Well, happy cows make good milk. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today, Frank, and I want to thank to everybody for listening. I want you all to tune in next week for more Cutting the Curd. Take care.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Heritage_Radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.